Behind the delivery trucks that keep your life stocked, thousands of employees at BP go to work every day. People bringing a new offshore production platform online. People making our refineries capable of more, like making renewable diesel from agricultural waste. People trading and shipping fuels to our customers. And people helping truckers fill up and get maintenance at our convenient locations. They're part of almost 300,000 jobs BP supports across the country. Learn more at bp.com/investing in America.
Hey y'all, Darius Rucker here. You know, a lot of people ask me, what inspires your music? And one of the big things is a strong sense of place. That's why I love my home state of South Carolina and want to share the awesome things it has to offer. From the beautiful mountains down to the sunny coast, it's got it all. Not to mention two of my personal favorites, great golf and amazing food. Come see why I love this place. Visit discoversouthcarolina.com.
So I have this game that I play. In lieu of actually knowing a lot of stuff about movies, I just play this game. And basically it's, follow me here, I pretend that an actor is playing the same character throughout all of their movies. Okay. So by stringing together all the movies, you can sort of make up a life story for this kind of extraordinary person. It's not a smart game, but it does help you to sort of orient yourself around the career. So in Amy's case, it's like, she started out as a mean girl in high school, but then she got caught up in an ill-advised marriage with Leonardo DiCaprio. Then she got knocked up, somehow became a princess.
Crawled right out of the sewer.
Right out of the sewer. She was briefly Amelia Earhart. Maybe she was cosplaying. She went toe-to-toe with Meryl Streep a few times, the wiser older woman, and was in the room when Meryl said, I have such doubts.
I have such doubts.
I have... such doubts.
And then she was involved in a string of relationships with powerful men. She was with an L. Ron Hubbard type. She was with Superman. She was with Dick Cheney. And then after a brief stint as an alien translator in which she was exposed to the simultaneity of time, she kind of breaks down. She starts drinking a lot. She solves some crimes. She gets spied on a lot. And then she gets married, has kids, gets a house in the suburbs, turns into a dog.
Eight nipples. And that's one too many for me. Seven, I think. So Amy's an interesting case because she really didn't get famous until she was 25 in Junebug.
Mm-hmm.
So she had so many wonderful supporting performances early in her career.
Yeah.
And then when she became a leading lady, those are much more internal, maybe pensive performances. They're quieter. So like she's all of a sudden sitting in a tub waiting to be attacked by a man.
Yeah.
So many of our leading ladies. Or she's looking through the window at a woman in another building waiting to be attacked by a man.
Yeah.
It's inception for femininity.
Oh.
The feminine within the feminine. Like, it's all mediated.
Yeah. But so let me counter that by saying, I think she's aware of all of these roles. I think she's aware of how it all fits together. Because I think Amy's smart, Gabby. I think she's an operator. And I think she recognizes how to use her image, mm-hmm, and how to game these roles. And so if she's choosing all of these tub and shower scenes, again, I think it's because she knows they're important, not just to her career, but to how they fit into the larger history of film, to what it all means from the beginning of film to now. And I think she's leaning into that. But Gabby, how do we prove that? We need data. Lots of data. I'm Brandon R. Reynolds.
And I'm Gabby Lombardo. In this episode, we investigate the secret history of bathtubs and showers by looking at 1,500 movies. 1,500 movies. We found out that there are eras associated with bathing, and we talked to film scholars about what bathtubs and showers and other bodies of water mean in the language of cinema. That all gets us closer to finding out if bathing dramatically wins awards, and in turn, it gets us closer to an answer to our question, why is Amy in the bath?
Probably the most famous bather, historically speaking, is Cleopatra, who, according to legend, maintained her youth and beauty by bathing in ass's milk, which is somehow more funny rather than less when you clarify that by ass they mean donkey. The scene is such a classic that it's right there in the early days of Hollywood.
I think the most famous moment from a DeMille film that I can think of is Claudette Colbert as Cleopatra bathing in ass's milk for an entire sequence of the Cleopatra film that DeMille made.
This is Henry Jenkins. He's a cultural scholar at the University of Southern California. We heard from him in the last episode.
And that starts to hint at what makes a bathtub scene interesting, which is in that scene, the milky coloring on top of bits and pieces we glimpse of Claudette Colbert's flesh creates a particular kind of sensuality of the, am I seeing that or am I not seeing that variety, right? It's not quite transparent.
I, of course, wanted to see this, so I pulled up DeMille's 1934 epic Cleopatra on a very sketchy Russian streaming website. It's one of DeMille's early epics.
Cleopatra is a magic name, a symbol of romance and love, yet she still remains a mystery, eternal as the Sphinx.
So I scanned along the whole thing, 2+ hours, from Cleo's ill-fated love affair with Caesar to her ill-fated love affair with Mark Antony.
And so begins one of the great love stories of all time, starting with human desire and rising to immortality.
But I didn't see any ass milk. So I went through it again, slower. I did this a bunch of times, while probably the Russian intelligence services vacuumed up all my data. And, you know, for such a famous scene, I assumed it was really, really short, maybe because of the nudity. But damn it, I wanted to see that ass milk.
The problem was that he was looking in the wrong movie. Okay, everyone got it wrong, though, to defend you, Brandon. So the scene where Claudette Colbert bathes in ass's milk is not Cleopatra. It's another DeMille movie, one he did a couple years before in 1932. It's called The Sign of the Cross. And everyone thinks the milk scene is in Cleopatra because everyone's forgotten The Sign of the Cross. Because it's kind of terrible.
Odysseus, you're perspiring with news.
I was famished for a chat. I have a great deal of news.
Well, I haven't time for a chat.
Yeah, but the milk scene is in there. Claudette is a Roman empress married to Nero, which, a woman in a tub with a monstrous husband? This is familiar, Brandon. We're going to see a lot of this coming up. So that was Claudette's breakout role, though. Per Vanity Fair, she dished about filming the scene with the famous celebrity interviewer Rex Reed. It really captures a different time in Hollywood, and though there's no recording of it, it's worth hearing performed.
I'm on top of the throne, surrounded by 4 blacks. They called them Nubians then, honey. And all the eunuchs. The blacks and the eunuchs were always shooting craps.
Yeah, real old school gal, Claudette. But so this famous tub scene, here's what she said about that.
2 men with cardboard stirred up the milk at the other end of the bathtub so that it would make waves, and the milk went below my nipples. DeMille would yell, cut, till they got more milk above the censorship level. I was sweating like hell in all that hot milk.
And you know what?
Hmm.
You really can see her nips,
okay?
At the end of the scene, she tells her attendant,
take off your clothes. Get in here and tell me all about it.
It's a crazy scene for 1932. Some real lesbian energy and a tasteless fade out with a squirting fountain. Classic. Apparently, those milkmen stirred that milk so hard that after a dinner break, they came back to the set and the milk had curdled into cheese.
That's a tale as old as time. That's truly biblical. Yeah, the point of this whole saga is that tubs have always been there, just tucked away in Hollywood history, ready to be unearthed by people like Rex Reed and Claudette Colbert, probably just smoking and thinking of all the craziest stories she's ever heard. So for every classic film like Cleopatra or the other Cleopatra or maybe the other Cleopatra and maybe there's a TV series, there's a forgotten weirdo movie that's channeling the real Hollywood, the horny id of American cinema.
Mm-hmm. This is the story of the one. As a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility, he knows keeping the line up and running is a top priority. That's why he chooses Grainger. Because when a drive belt gets damaged, Grainger makes it easy to find the exact specs for the replacement product he needs. And next day delivery helps ensure he'll have everything in place and running like clockwork. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Lowe's knows how to get you ready for holiday hosting with up to 35% off select home decor. And get up to 35% off select major appliances. Plus, members get free delivery, haulaway, basic installation, parts, and a 2-year Lowe's protection plan when you spend $2,500 or more on select LG major appliances. Valid through 10-1. Member offer excludes Massachusetts, Maryland, Wisconsin, New Jersey, and Florida. Installed by independent contractors. Exclusions apply. See Lowe's.com for more details.
You know who recognizes that crazy Hollywood id, Gabby?
I bet you'll say Amy Adams
does do that. She knows it. She knows it in her heart and in her powerful mind. I refer you, Gabby, to her 2008 movie, Miss Pettigrew Lives for a Day, for explanation on this. In that, she's an aspiring singer slash actress named what?
Delicia LaFosse.
What an incredible name. Yeah, so it's set in London right at the beginning of World War II, kind of right in that DeMille Cleopatra era, actually. Yeah. And there's a tub scene early on that really sets the stage for the conflict of the movie. So here's Delicia talking about her boy problems with Miss Pettigrew, who is played by Frances McDormand.
No, I won't accept that. I won't. This, all of you, none of you stuff that Michael's pulling. It's too much.
But he is in love with you, Delicia. Can you say that about anyone else?
But Gabby, don't take my word for it, because guess what? We talked to the screenwriter of Miss Pettigrew and just went ahead and asked him what the tub really means. This is David McGee, and he's written a few movies you've heard of. He wrote Finding Neverland, which was nominated for a screenplay Oscar. He wrote Life of Pi, and then the Emily Blunt picture Mary Poppins Returns.
The tone of different bathtub scenes can vary wildly from escapist bubbles, the kind of the frippery of the Pettigrew scene where Pettigrew is standing in there while she's in her big bubble bath and then draping her with a robe and commenting on how beautiful she is and all of that. And that's a very different feel than a bathtub scene where you feel as the viewer as though you are a bit spying in on someone's private moment.
Like you said, the beginning of the movie is frenetic. There's a lot of quick cuts. And then the tub scene is like hero's journey, classic moment where it's like, this is a moment of pause. It's also the moment where the quest is stated. You have to pick between three guys. This wise person's going to help you out. In the cold serpent mind of the writer, where you're thinking like, this is where we're gonna put all the thematics are going to be right here in this tub.
It's interesting. I think that as a writer, I'm always happy for those moments where you earned a pause, where you earned a moment to sit and reflect. I think it's such a luxurious scene, marble tub, bath, bubbles, all of this, that you can enjoy being in the location, but you can also sit still for a moment and talk without feeling like you're trying to shove theme and lines in under when no one's looking, you know. It gives you a moment to sit in the scene, and I always think of that, how those moments as being earned.
Top of your head, you're on the psychiatrist's couch. What's tub mean to you? What does shower mean to you? How do you use them? Why?
I think, first of all, I think they're different. Just on the basic level, I think a shower is very functional. Just, you know, I'm getting it done. Now, of course, it can turn into psycho or whatever. But a bath is much more slowing down, reflective. It is a time alone, I think of. I think what they're generally used for is revealing vulnerability.
Yeah, I mean, as the person who first put Amy in a bath, like, this is huge for us. This is really big. It's really big. What makes her a good tub actress, do you think? Because she's in a lot of tubs. People are putting her in tubs a lot. Like, in the last half of her most recent projects, she had a bathtub scene or a shower scene.
You know, this is news to me. Now that you've said it, I realize it. I don't know what it is that prompts us to keep going back to tub scenes. I mean, in the film that I did with her, she has this wonderful openness and ease in her manner in that tub in such a way that she just kind of floats through that scene. I mean that as, you know, the highest compliment. She's wonderful in that scene. And as an actress, she really is able to find those little things that make each character unique. And I guess you just need to get her back in the tub to see how she's going to handle it with each of those characters. That's all I can figure. But she's a wonderful actress, you know.
David had a lot more to say, so if you want to hear a longer interview with him, that's on the Grab Bag Patreon, guys. Subscribe.
Gabby, do you remember when we got into this, what we went in thinking the tub meant?
Yeah, well, we assumed it was about titillation, some sort of coding for sex or desirability. Talking to experts, well, it's clear that's what the scholars who've thought the most about cinema kind of think about it too, at first blush.
So it occurs to me that the bathtub is an available visual container for the desire to look but pretend we're not looking, pretend that it's in the service of the story.
This is Phyllis Thompson. She's a cultural historian at Harvard. She studies gender and sexuality. Here, Phyllis connects the voyeurism of bathtubs in the movies to the little peeping freaks of the classical era.
Just as classical paintings leaned on mythology, in which case, of course, it made sense to have all the women be nude with, you know, maybe a tiny little drape, right? It's the same thing.
Tubs create a through line from the horny masters of yore to the horny masters of today, who are probably on 4chan and Reddit.
All right.
And nudecelebs.com.
That's right.
We don't need to bring that up.
That gets us to what we call around the Wise Amy and the Bath HQ, the big sample.
Mm-hmm. So from the beginning of this investigation, we realized there wasn't really any data on how bathing shows up in the movies, right? So we got a hold of a data set of 1,500 scripts, and I went through them, command effing my way to madness. Pardon my French. I found all available and accurate screenplays, but then to really take data, I would have to cross-check a character with a bathtub scene against IMDb to find out who played that character. And then always double-check, in the cases where it's not clear, whether there truly was a tub scene, by Googling around, by watching the damn thing. Because, Ray, sometimes it's like...
I knew this was big, but I couldn't believe these numbers. It was beautiful data rolling in, and it was gonna prove my theory. You know, the history of Hollywood is like... Well, it's like a big old boulevard full of lights and stories that everyone's familiar with. But what the data was showing was that there was this alley or side street that ran alongside the entire history of the movies, from the very beginning to now. And it explained so much of the artifice and the seediness behind those bright lights. And we were about to blow it wide open. Our little study of bathtubs was about to change everything.
After I crunched all those numbers, first of all, I learned that tubs have been with us a really long time. So in our sample, the earliest bathtubs are pretty much about titillation and horror. The two are paired. So for instance, the very first tub in our sample is a Hitchcock movie.
Psycho.
No. This is 33 years before. This is Hitchcock's silent third feature film. It's called The Lodger, a story of the London fog. He later called this, you know, effectively his directorial debut because it was his first real success and it shaped the thriller genre. So there's a blonde woman in a bathtub, standing outside the door talking to her is this mysterious man. We think he's a killer because there's a killer on the loose and they're all staying at this lodge, this hotel.
But, spoiler alert, the lodger is not the killer.
No, he was innocent. But anyways, it's fitting that our most psychosexual director effectively begins his career with a bathtub.
Yeah.
Sex and murder.
Right, and so that idea of titillation and horror really kind of carries through the entire history of film.
Oh yeah, I mean, you think about it, later smart horror uses the tub to show either rape or sexual transgression of some sort. There's Cronenberg's feature directorial debut, Shivers. from 1975.
A woman is menaced by like a STD parasite worm thing.
You've seen this cover.
Yeah, it's very famously one of the horror covers that has a tub in it with the slug crawling up the side.
Yeah, she's in the tub enjoying herself and the slug comes up through the drain. But you know, The Shining, first he sees a beautiful young woman in the tub and then she turns into a crone. Frightening. Nightmare on Elm Street, of course.
Yeah.
Right? Freddy's claw between the legs.
Yeah.
It's that combination of danger and vulnerability and...
Violation.
And of course, Hollywood loves riffing on itself, right? Making tropes out of very iconic cinematic moments. So like the horror bathtub, it's been parodied so much. You have so many Psycho parodies. Think of Ghostbusters 2.
Tub tries to eat the baby.
The bathtub was trying to eat Oscar. I was giving him a bath. There was all this pink ooze everywhere and it was reaching for him.
So that's tub horror and the parodies of tub horror. You've seen them, you know them, you love them. This connects to more modern bathtub thrillers. Right? Think Black Swan, What Lies Beneath.
That encompasses a whole huge genre of movies in the 80s and 90s, you know, the Fatal Attractions, all of the stuff that's going to lead up into the 21st century with Amy doing tub scenes, all of these leading ladies doing these big dramatic tub scenes that often are at least thriller adjacent. And we're going to spend a lot more time on that later.
But for now, let's back up and hit the golden age of Hollywood. Because these are a lot of the most famous bathtub scenes. 40s, 50s, those really glamorous tubs.
Yeah, kind of the perfect blend of maximum celebrity and maximum titillation. Famous people in tubs doing adorable, suggestive things, but big hits.
Exactly. So this is Marilyn's bath in 7 Year Itch. Her curves under all those suds. She's being very coy with the handyman next to her.
Yeah, and you told me that there are two versions of that.
Right, yeah. They censored that. In one version, the handyman drops his wrench into her bathtub and digs it out.
He was frothing at the mouth, just like the creature from the Black Lagoon.
I'm sorry.
That's all right.
That didn't make it on screen, unsurprisingly. And maybe it was because of the Hays Code, which was instituted in 1934, pretty much lasted until 1968. The Hays Code, aka the Motion Picture Production Code, was basically a set of censorship guidelines for the studios to follow. It was a list of do's and don'ts and be carefuls that were pretty formulaic. One don't was, quote, licentious or suggestive nudity. So you can imagine a bathtub is a wonderful way to get a somewhat nude Marilyn on screen. You know, some sensor bubbles. That's not too bad.
So then the bathtub during that period of the Hays Code became sort of a tool for filmmakers to get to explore some of the seedier elements that they couldn't say overtly, but you could sort of hide it behind porcelain and get away with some of that storytelling.
Right. So a perfect example is Pillow Talk from 1959. This is Rock Hudson and Doris Day. People know the famous split screen of them both in their beds, in their separate homes, talking on the phone, pillow talk. But they also each have a tub scene in which they're on the phone with each other, split screen, foot to foot, tub to tub. But it's almost as if they're in the tub together because they're speaking so intimately and you imagine them naked in the same space because on screen they're semi-naked in the same space.
Am I going to see you tonight?
Oh, I'd love to, Rex, but I already have a date tonight.
Who with?
A client. You don't know him. Jonathan Forbes.
Of course, you ain't the kind of gal who'd break a date.
No, I'm not.
Just as horror tubs were parodied, so too were these glamorous, sexy, celebrity-driven bathtubs. So, like, think of Some Like It Hot, 1959. That's just 4 years after Marilyn's very sexy, funny bath in 7 Year Itch. Well, in Some Like It Hot, Tony Curtis is in drag. Marilyn thinks he's a woman. He's in the tub, and Marilyn's outside the tub sitting next to him. But there's that weird tension of, this is famously the hottest woman in the world. We saw her in that tub in 7 Year Itch. She was wonderful. And here she is just chatting to one of her girlfriends, so she thinks. But it's this man who really would like to bed her. And then the comedy of that. Like, what if we made Tony Curtis do what Marilyn so famously did?
Go on, tell me all about him.
Well, he's young and he's handsome. He's a bachelor. He's a real gentleman. You know, not one of these grabbers.
Titillation, again, becomes this tool to suggest all of these different things. Although, in that case, the titillation is not, are we going to get to see a little of Tony Curtis's ample bosom? Because he will show that to anyone, probably. It's more a will they or won't they in a setting that we have now spent decades associating with the possibility of nudity, sex, etc., etc.
Yes, screwball comedies really make a lot of hay out of the bathtub. Even today, that's a tradition that's been continued in, think of Patty Jenkins' Wonder Woman from 2017. You have a gender swap tub scene there. Gal Gadot, as Wonder Woman, walks in on a naked Chris Pine taking a little grotto bath. So that subverts that very gendered rom-com trope of someone walking in on someone bathing, the Venus Observed.
A similar kind of Venus Observed who's larger and greener is the Hulk in Thor Ragnarok, where Thor comes into this chamber and the Hulk is sulking in this dark tub. And then the whole comedy is the Hulk gets out of the tub and you can see Hemsworth averting his eyes.
Oh, that's... naked. He's very naked.
It's about how do you connect these two characters who have sort of historically been emotionally cut off, hard to reach, mm-hmm. very aggressive, very masculine, and then one of them is in a tub, doesn't care, so it becomes sort of this locker room thing. But it is a scene in which, I cannot believe I'm still talking about it, it is a scene in which it leads to a greater connection and intimacy between those two characters. There's a real shift there. I swear to God, I'm done talking about it now.
Well, maybe I'm not, Brandon.
Oh, no.
Maybe I want to keep talking about this.
Okay.
How green is Hulk, do you think, down there?
I think he's green all the way. You mean, is he greener? Probably.
Like the carpet matches the drapes?
That's in my brain now.
And then there's one other category of tub purposes that I really like, which is the way the tub is used to break the fourth wall.
The most famous one being Ferris Bueller in the shower. That's 1986. Ferris breaks the fourth wall while he's shampooing his hair.
I do have a test today. That wasn't bullshit. It's on European socialism. I mean, really, what's the point? I'm not European. I don't plan on being European. So who gives a crap if they're socialists?
And then, of course, there's Margot Robbie in the bathtub in The Big Short in 2015.
Our friend Michael Burry found out that these mortgage bonds that were supposedly 65% AAA were actually just mostly full of shit. So now he's going to short the bonds, which means to bet against. Got it? Now fuck off.
Lowe's knows how to help make your home holiday ready for less. Get select style selections vinyl flooring for just $1.99 per square foot and have it installed before the festivities begin. Our team can help you every step of the way. See a Lowe's Red Vest associate or visit lowes.com/holiday install to get started. Lowe's, we help, you save. Basic install only. Date restrictions apply. Subject to availability. Install by independent contractor. See associate for details. Contiguous U.S. only.
Attention all small biz owners. At the UPS store, you can count on us to handle your packages with care. With our certified packing experts, your packages are properly packed and protected. And with our pack and ship guarantee, when we pack it and ship it, we guarantee it. Because your items arrive safe or you'll be reimbursed. Visit theupsstore.com/guarantee for full details. Most locations are independently owned. Product, services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary. See center for details. The UPS Store. Be unstoppable. Come into your local store today.
Gabby, as a man, I feel like we haven't talked about men enough.
Oh?
I'm starting to feel very neglected. Don't men also bathe? Do we not also need to be clean?
I mean, in my experience, I don't think you guys really prioritize it.
Yeah, you're probably right. But that doesn't mean that it doesn't happen in the cinema, does it?
No, certainly not. We were focusing on women, but naturally, data on male bathing man spread its way into our sample.
Which turned out to be very interesting.
It did. Most surprising. So first of all, let's talk about how often women show up in bathtubs. In our sample, about 8.3% of films feature a woman in a bathtub. But, much to my chagrin, men are not far behind the girls. They're on our tails.
Men can do anything women can do, including bathe.
You can't let us have just this one space free of your influence. So women have about 8.3%, right? Guess how many tubs men are in our sample?
Close to that.
Close to that, 7.73%. The boys are not even a full percentage point behind us. In fact, men outnumber women in tubs in three decades. In the 50s, the 60s, and the 80s, men have more tubs than women.
Okay, so for the 50s and 60s, my first thought was, it's gotta be Westerns.
Well, you're right on, because the first male bathtub in our sample is indeed from a Western, The Searchers, 1956.
How you can ever make out to be bashful in front of a woman, I'll never know.
Now you talk like a feller just might as well run around naked.
Wouldn't bother me nothing.
So this is an interesting scene. Jeffrey Hunter there, he's in the tub, sitting next to the fire. Vera Miles is cleaning up his clothes. She's fussing at him for being kind of standoffish. She's covering himself with some kind of dirty shirt. And the tub is actually being used by the woman as a weapon to get him to open up a little more.
The woman as a civilizing force, right? The promise of domesticity. And these cowboys have a fear of that.
It's great.
It's all in there.
Yeah. And that won Best Picture.
No, it didn't.
And that did not win Best Picture.
I'm sorry. It did not. But classic John Ford Western. Can you imagine him like booming directions through the microphone into this tub scene?
Emote more. Be more vulnerable. Cigarette, cigarette, cigarette.
Now, we were searching for folks to shed light on why is Amy in the bath? Because it's a strange question, and one that, as far as we know, no serious scholar has looked at. There are no bathtub scholars.
Couldn't find any. But if there are some, let us know.
Why is Amy in the bath is a pop culture question, but we had to find someone who would take it really seriously. That's when we stumbled upon Maria Sanfilippo. She's a professor at Emerson and a film scholar who studies cinema through the lens of gender, sexuality, digital culture. So she was a great one to ask about dudes in the tub.
And of course, the bathtub, when men are concerned, they can both like shore up masculinity by showing how dirty the Western cowboy was right before he's put into the bath. But even if he's in the bath, he can use it as yet another way of shoring up masculinity by being presented in terms of decadence and excess. Like I'm thinking of Scarface in his gigantic hot tub. And I feel like it's oftentimes used as a way of showing a man's exorbitant sexual appeal and ability to surround himself with women or wealth or both.
Thank you, Maria. You have now ushered us into the coked-up 1980s. And movies like Scarface, Brian De Palma's 1983 masterpiece.
It's the fucking bankers, the politicians, they're the ones that want to make coke illegal. So they can make the fucking money, and then they get the fucking votes.
But so Scarface is the perfect film to illustrate a real revelation to us in the data, which is that in the 1980s, as in the 50s and 60s, men spend more time in the tub than women, and in fact are twice as likely to spend time in jacuzzis.
This is not your mother's bathtub. This is...
In fact, it's your father's bathtub.
Yeah.
If your father was on a lot of drugs.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, I mean, you can be critical of the joke and certainly the meme that Scarface has become, but that was actually Pacino's Claudette Colbert moment. It's not milk, but it is cocaine water.
Oh, yeah. A new category.
Well, it's a subset. It's perhaps the ultimate subset of leisure water. You can't get much more leisurely.
I think you can. I think this might be the opposite. I think cocaine water might be more similar to Augustus Gloop drowning in chocolate liquid.
Oh, very good. No one's ever really made the connection between Scarface and Augustus Gloop, but here we are.
Greedy boys and their downfalls.
That's right.
The hubris. So the first film in our sample to feature a jacuzzi was Cronenberg's Rabid from 1977.
Now, the jacuzzi illustrates an interesting wrinkle in the data, which is that it's not just tubs and showers. There's all kinds of other bodies of water that one can soak in for all kinds of reasons. And as cinema evolved, types of bathing also evolved to capture different kinds of stories. So, you know, you have the milk bath, but you also have acid baths. There's, of course, grottos, hot springs, and the prison hose down, which we're going to talk a lot more about later.
Will we ever? But to be clear, we differentiated between a jacuzzi tub in a bathroom like Pacino's and Scarface and an outdoor jacuzzi. We didn't count those as bathtubs.
Interestingly, for sci-fi wonks, there is a subcategory within all this, which is the healing tub, which you see in Star Wars with the Bacta tank, in Dune with the tub of black goo, the Matrix, you know, they're floating in some kind of amniotic fluid that keeps them locked into the machine. So that falls into the category of tubs that will heal you, but that are very gross for various reasons.
And a lot of sci-fi tubs are pretty transformational.
Yeah.
In Constantine, Rachel Weisz enters the underworld via the tub.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Tub as portal.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I mean, that's Nightmare on Elm Street, which we mentioned before. She gets dragged down to Freddy's realm through the tub.
Yeah.
Until she claws her way out.
All right, Gabby, let's talk numbers.
So in our sample, the best times for bathtub scenes were the 1970s and the 2000s. Those two decades tied for the most bathtub scenes overall at about 17%.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes sense. The 70s is a very nitty-gritty, more homegrown, domestic drama-oriented decade for film. Real stories about real people. So maybe you see more homes. Maybe you see more bathrooms. They're not afraid to put it all up there. And the 2000s, that's after the wave of indie cinema in the 90s. Again, maybe more domestic dramas. That's our pet theory anyways, but we'll get more into that in later episodes.
All right, but let's talk about what everyone has tuned in to hear about, which is sex.
Mm.
Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams, whew,
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Tubs and showers, obviously good for sex scenes, if not for actual sex. Some results may vary. Gabby, what's the first male-female sample you found?
That would be our guy Al again, Serpico, 1973.
Dirty dog. How about the first instance of tub sex?
That would be Bull Durham, 1988. That's Susie Sarandon and good old Kevin Costner.
No complaints there. No notes.
Remember 100 years ago when we started talking about tubs and titillation, promising sex without showing it?
I do.
Well, the promise is fulfilled, baby. The Kwisatz Haderach of Tubbs is here. Kinda. Anyways, oh. In the 90s, men and women in the tub together hit an all-time high.
How much?
Almost a third of the 90s films in our sample included a male-female tub scene.
That is, to coin a phrase, bananas.
That's a lot.
That's really crazy. So why do we think it peaked in the 90s? Well, the 90s were the golden era of independent cinema. So you had all these upstarts like New Line and Miramax who were picking up these properties that were considered too risky for the mainstream. So now imagine you have these directors who are working with smaller budgets and who need to pack in the drama of a sex scene or whatever. And maybe all of those folks knew what we're creeping up on now, which is that the tub is a good way to distill serious drama and maybe really horny scenes into an essentially inexpensive package.
Sadly, after the 90s, it falls off a cliff. Men and women have less and less joint tub scenes throughout the 21st century. I mean, in our sample, it's basically dwindled to zero.
We don't even know each other anymore.
You're a stranger to me, oh films. He misses the horny days of Hollywood.
I mean, I think we all do. All right, so let's wrap up the big sample. After looking at 1,500 movies, who's the big winner in terms of bathtubs versus showers? Drumroll, please.
Overall, showers outnumber tubs.
Barely, though. Only by less than a percent. They're pretty close.
Sure. But for women, and here's Amy again, back to our question. For women, tubs outnumber showers.
And for men, the opposite is true. Showers outnumber tubs.
Just another match in the eternal battle of the sexes.
3 years this project's been going on. It's taken a lot of twists and turns. But the reason that we are fast-tracking this project now is simply because Night Bitch finally came out. When we were talking about it a year and change ago, we thought maybe this will be a movie that wins it for. Then it came out, and then predictably there was a flurry of coverage that said maybe this is going to be her year, maybe she's going to get the nom and then the award. Got very excited about that. But unfortunately, because we were pegging something to a real event, it meant that at some point the fantasy would either have to be confirmed and we would live in our castle in the clouds, or it would collapse all around us. And so the Oscar nominations have just been announced, and now we must face the first really terrible truth of this podcast. I don't have the constitution for it, so I'm going to let Gabby tell us the good or bad news.
Okay, bad news, people. Amy was not nominated for an Oscar for Night Bitch.
Ouch.
And there are no bathtub nominees in 2025.
Extraordinary. But not surprising.
Yeah, yeah. But here it is, Brandon. Three of the five nominees have a shower scene.
Yes!
In fact, two of them have multiple shower scenes. So let me take you through it before you go on your hunger strike.
Sure.
To get Amy her Oscar. Demi Moore is the front runner for The Substance, a wonderful sci-fi body horror comedy, and she's got two shower scenes in that. Then there's our ingenue, Mikey Madison, for Anora, basically a modern-day Pretty Woman, modern-day Pygmalion. Then there's Fernanda Torres for I'm Still Here, a biopic based on a memoir, one woman's fight for the truth in the midst of a military dictatorship, losing her husband. Then there are two nominees who have no water scenes. Cynthia Erivo for Wicked, none. Carla Sofia Gascon for Amelia Perez, no water scenes. Not a drop.
Huh. But what's cool about that is that these movies do speak to a lot of the themes that we have talked about so far and that we're going to talk about in future episodes. That also sets the stage for our next episode, in which we at long last dive into every single Best Actress nominated movie, looking at all the tubs, all the showers, all the leisure water, prison hose downs, every single moment.
Gas station whore baths.
gas station whore baths, who can forget? All the great moments of bathing-related acting that has populated an entire century of films in America.
And that you'll be able to kind of see in movies like The Substance, like Anora, like I'm Still Here. You know, the ways in which the beats of certain types of plots, you know, the hag plot, the fairy tale plot of Anora, you know, the put-upon wife and mother plot of I'm Still Here. How do they include tubs? What does that look like? It's all really interesting. Like, you'll be able to see Sunset Boulevard in The Substance. And we'll get into that next week. It's really, really fucking cool.
And also, we're going to be able to see, as we go through it, those roles that I think shaped Amy's thinking as far as why she started to orient herself tubward for these important roles.
Yeah, we get a little deep into the weeds, I'd say.
But that's all for next week. For now, this has been Why is Amy in the Bath? I'm Brandon R. Reynolds.
And I'm Gabby Lombardo.
We'll see you next time.
Why is Amy in the Bath is produced by Brandon and me for Grab Bag Collab. Our show is produced and edited by Livy Burdett, and our theme song and music is by Nathan Reedy. Our logo was created by John Ross. Special thanks to Janet Varney, who was our Claudette Colbert. New episodes drop Mondays for Grab Bag subscribers and go wide Fridays. Subscribers to Grab Bag get access to a bunch of cool stuff. Extended interviews, more tub data, and some bathtub after dark convos. You will not be disappointed. If you want to sink deeper into the tub with us, email us at amyinthebathpod@gmail.com. Check out our Substack, becauseitstrue.substack.com, where we talk more about our research and the secret history of the movies. Finally, follow us on Letterboxd at amybathpod for curated lists of tub films.
Hey, wake up! New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams, whew,
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's,